A big thank you to Father Veselin and His Grace Bishop Silvan for making this possible tonight. It is a great honor for us and a blessing, a very big blessing, to be here with you and to celebrate the Vespers with you and also say a few words. You have a very special family here, and of course, it's not a big family, but enjoy it while it's small, because it will not be small forever. And you will look back to the beginnings and you will see how nice it was. Not that it will not be nice when the family grows, but it's a different feeling. So enjoy this small family you've got while it lasts. And today we will say a few things about the spiritual life in the modern world. Before I left Perth, a young boy came to me for confession. He is 9 years old. He's not Greek, he's not Serbian, he's not Australian. It doesn't matter what nationality he is. He speaks English. So he came for confession. He comes a few times every year. He's a tiny boy. And this child has the feeling that confession is something very important for him. So we sat down, we spoke, he read the list that he had written down for confession. And after, he asked me a question that was troubling him. It was a very simple thing that had to do with his school and some friends and how things are going there. But it was so important to him that he was like expecting my answer as if it was something so important for his salvation, although it was a very simple subject. So what I'm trying to say here is that if we don't teach our children from a young age to go for confession and to talk about their problems and to ask questions to their spiritual fathers, when they grow, when they become teenagers, there is no chance that they will stay in the church, and they will have a great difficulty talking about their problems with their spiritual father, with their confessor father. So it has to start from a young age. Otherwise, it's very difficult. It can definitely happen later on as well, but it will be very difficult. Now, this young boy, one of the previous times, he asked me, what does someone need to become a priest? So what I'm trying to say is not if this boy will become a priest or not. What I'm trying to say is that he's an altar boy. He looks up to us. And his role model is someone who's in the church, someone who's a monk, someone who's a priest. Compare this role model of this child with the role models that the young generation has today, and you can understand that there is a difference there. So regardless if this child will become a priest or an astronaut, it doesn't matter. What matters is that when he goes to the next stage in his life, when he becomes a teenager, he will know what's right and what's wrong. And he will know when he does something wrong that he has to go for confession. But if you try to teach this child 10 years later, it will be too late. My first personal experience with confession was when I was in the kindergarten. And my grandmother, who was very close to the church, got me for confession. He was a very old and respectable priest. I told him a few things. I didn't really have much to say. But God gave me a very special experience at this day. I kneeled, he read the prayer on me, and I felt like after the prayer, when I stood up, I had no weight. I felt like I was flying. I don't know how to express it. I can never forget this experience, and this is what kept me closer to the church. So, again, to where I started from, if we don't teach our children from a young age to have a spiritual father, later on in their lives, they will go through a lot of problems and they will not have the assistance that they could have if they were close to the church. So if anybody asks what's the age for someone to bring his children to the church, I would say, as far as they understand and they can talk, just bring them in. The confession will not be perfect, but the confession is a sacrament, and the blessing they will get from the priest cannot be replaced with anything else on this planet. Now, another thing on the same subject. There was a family where I come from, in the island where I was born, and the husband and the wife, they had a big problem. The problem was that when the father was telling off the children, the wife, although she knew that what the father was doing was right, she couldn't handle it. So she would get involved, and then the situation will end up with a fight between the mother and the father. And they couldn't work out what to do. So they went to their spiritual father. They had the same spiritual father. And the spiritual father saved the family because it was getting really bad. So he told the wife, the husband is the one who's strongest from the couple, for this specific couple. And he told the wife, when the father tells off your son, you go to another room. They did that, and they saved their marriage, which is such something so simple. But their marriage was in trouble just because they couldn't handle, they didn't know how to deal with this situation. And what I'm trying to tell you here is that the husband and the wife, they need to have the same spiritual father, because if problems arise within the family, he will be the one to tell them what to do. And if they have learned a little bit of obedience in their lives, this can literally save their marriage. Now, these were a few things about repentance. Now we'll say a few things about humility. And all these things that we'll talk about, repentance, humility, obedience, and prayer, they have to do with our spiritual life in this modern world, in simple words. Now, when Jesus washed his disciples' feet, this was during the Last Supper, we would say that this was a very humble thing to do for him. He was God, he became human. Back then, they were wearing sandals and they were walking on dirt roads, so their feet, they would be very dirty. And Jesus, although he knew who he was, he did what he did. But the real humility of Jesus was not to wash his disciples' feet. The real humility of Jesus was to become human. He was God. He was something totally different, something uncomprehensible, and he became something which is so limited. This was the real humility. So washing his disciples' feet was just a lesson he had to give to his disciples, to tell them not to be embarrassed to do whatever it takes if this was to help someone. Washing someone's feet, back then he did literally, but how could we wash someone's feet in our society? It's like when we stand next to them when they have pain, when they have psychological pain, when they struggle from thoughts. Washing their feet is like cleaning the dirt from their intellect when this gets dirty going through the paths of our lives. And in this way, we can serve our brothers and sisters. So, being humble is not doing humiliating acts. Being humble is knowing where we come from and when we're heading. This is what Jesus did. He knew who he was. He knew where he was coming from and where he was heading. So for him to wash his disciples' feet was nothing, was something important, something he had to do. So when we know where we are coming from and where we are heading to, there is no action that could be humble. There is no action that could be humiliating for us. There is no humility. Humility is all in the way that we think. If we think that something is humbling, something is humiliating, we think that by doing this thing we will humble ourselves. But that's not how things work. There is no job in the world that is humble or humiliating, and there is nothing that could humble us or humiliate us if we know who we are. So I know I'm Greek. If someone calls me a different nationality, it doesn't make any difference for me because I know that I'm Greek. And it doesn't mean that this is good or bad. It means that this is who I am. The same way, if someone calls us names, it doesn't change anything in us because we are who we are. And if we have our relationship with God, this cannot humble us, this cannot humiliate us. But if we play our role in the humanity right, this is the humble thing to do. So when Virgin Mary, when Panagia was asked from the angel to incarnate Christ, to give birth to God, she could have said, I'm human, and out of humility I just can't accept that, I can't understand it anyway, so how I can't accept it, I can't do it. If she was to be humble in this way, all of us, we would have lost our chance to be saved. We would have lost our salvation. So the humble thing was not to say, I'm human, I can't do what you're asking me, but the humble thing, the humiliating thing for Christ would have been if a human was to refuse his incarnation. What I'm trying to tell you is that being humble is not doing something specific. Being humble is doing what God asks us. And he might ask us to be something which doesn't look humble, but if we accept it by letting ourselves in his hands, like Panagia did, we can be the cause of salvation of thousands of people. And even if we can't save anybody else than ourselves, this is good enough. This is good enough. And our example can inspire others around us, and this will be greater than what we ever thought it could be. So, humility is to accept the responsibilities and the roles that God is giving us. Also, humility, we could say, is to let things go if people have hurt us, if they have misjudged us, if they throw smart comments on us. And humility is also to recognize someone else's value and to be happy for his happiness. And we have to think here the example of St. John the Forerunner. Jesus says that he was the greatest man ever born. And when he realized who Jesus was, he told his disciples, don't worry about me, just follow him. So basically, all the work he ever did for the good and the salvation of people, he gave it away. Why? Because he knew that he was there to serve a person, a purpose. He knew where he was coming from and where he was going. And he gave up everything he stood for because this was his purpose. And we have to think alike when our children are trying to go closer to God. There are lots of examples that the parents, they don't want their children to fast, or they're trying to tell their kids that they don't need to pray too much and this and that. So basically, we're trying to keep our children to ourselves. But this means we are making ourselves God. And this is idolatry. We can't replace God. If our children want to go closer to God, we have to encourage them, not to tell them not to go closer to God. And sometimes humility is also to pretend that we enjoy something in our family and we enjoy something within our friendly environment just to make others happy. And this is how we can empty ourselves in order for our family to be happy. Now, all these things that we said about humility, if we don't want to empty ourselves, we just can't follow them. And we can always find plenty of excuses not to do what we have to do. Now, the next thing we will talk about in the spiritual life, in our everyday world, is about obedience. Some people, they say, happy wife, happy life. And it's the other way around, of course. But this means that our priority has to be the other people that they are in our life, that God gave us in our lives. So our priorities is not what we want, what we think, what we need, but what the other half of ourselves needs and wants and will help him or her to go closer to God. So obedience is not just to our spiritual father, but obedience exists within the family as well. Obedience is not if we were advised to do a certain set of prayers and we struggle to push ourselves to the point that we will give up everything. That's not obedience. That's just not knowing our limits and not being humble enough to admit that our limits are less than what we thought they are. Obedience that does not exist without confession of our thoughts and our difficulties that we face. So if we struggle with something and our spiritual father gave us a rule, something to follow in obedience, if we struggle with it, we have to go back and tell him, I tried, I can't do it, what do you suggest I do now? We cannot just push ourselves to the limits and then just forget about church because we just can't do it. Also, obedience does not mean if our spiritual father told us to fast and we live in a family of non-practicing Christians to start fights in the name of what our spiritual father advised us to do. Obedience has to be done in a way that we do not create problems in our immediate environment. And we can never say, my elder told me to do this, and then if this person cannot handle what we're telling him, it's like we turn this person against our elder, against someone who represents Christ. That's not wise. Obedience is an inner absence of reaction and an inner desire to please our God through following the instructions of our spiritual father or our spouse, if it has to do with our family matters. We see them as if we see Christ himself, and therefore we love and respect everything they ask for, everything they are, or everything that they represent. We need to be careful from familiarity when we talk about obedience. If we lose the respect and we see our spiritual father as a friend, we can easily override him and think we know better, or it doesn't really matter if we do not follow the exact instructions, and then this is a big mistake. Obedience basically means self-denial. The worst struggle is to refuse our logic and our so-called rights. Our entitlements and the virtues or qualities we think we possess. But without giving up ourselves, there is no spiritual freedom.